Welcome, everybody, to episode 360 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, July 17th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined once again by Mr. John James Jacoby, who, as I understand it, will be filing claims with his insurance company based on doctor's appointments he had last Wednesday, which is why we did not do a show. And, you know, it was the week after July 4th weekend. Quite frankly, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about last week, so it was kind of a nice point to take a little bit of time off, but glad to see you survived your doctor's appointment.
I did survive. I did survive. Thank you. You know, I turned 40 this year. There's a lot of preventative maintenance you've got to do, right?
So, oh, boy.
Real exciting stuff.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. We're going to have an interesting show today. It's a hot topic, something that has been discussed in the WordPress space about a month and a half ago, maybe sooner than that. If you recall, John, I think you may have been on the show. You may have been away. I know we talked about this. I talked about it with Malcolm Peralti, but there are some issues that were brought up with the WooCommerce actually had a document that talked about some of the sort of policies or sort of terms of use of their software and the WooCommerce platform as it relates to CBD products. And there was a lot of uncertainty and gray areas involved. And at some points, the wording kind of made it seem as if they were could almost control the way you were using open source software, which is a big no-no. You can use open source software for whatever use you want. So what they ended up doing after some controversy, some discussions, Paul got involved on Twitter and said, you know, we had no idea about this, the wording of this document, but thank you for bringing it up. And so he and his team worked together. And I was just reading the document today, and they actually changed it from, used to be just CBD, but now they call it highly regulated products. And they talk about not just CBD, but in general, highly regulated products. And they made some changes, and they're a lot, not a lot, but they're definitely less restrictive than they were, and they're a lot more clear on what they're going to allow with CBD products and WooCommerce in the future. And there's just a whole lot involved here. So I have a special guest on today. His name is Javier Cano, Director of Marketing for Liquid Web, and I'll refer to him as Javi from now on. It's just a lot easier to say. But Javi, thanks a lot for joining us on this show and providing guidance and showing us the light of this very confusing and complicated industry.
Yeah. So thanks for having me on. I guess give a little bit of background how I got involved in the whole kind of CBD space here at LiquidWeb was I believe it was almost a little over a year ago. We noticed we had got like a couple of customer signups kind of back to back to back, and they were all from Shopify. And I asked my sales, and they were all CBD. So I asked my sales guy, like, hey, what's like, why did like in one day and within like a couple hours, we got three CBD brands signing up with us all of a sudden. And so they said, well, they got some kind of notice that they had to get off Shopify, or they got kicked off. So looking for a new home. And so they were asking one, if LiquidWeb is comfortable with having a like CBD sales on our infrastructure. And then two is like, if we can help them find like a merchant processor. And so that's kind of when like the light bulb went off in my head in terms of kind of like, okay, well, you know, we're comfortable with hosting like CBD cannabis sites. And then LiquidWeb as a company has been around for, I don't know, 21 years or something like that. So we have relationships with like merchant processors. And so then it was just kind of like, okay, let's find the right kind of partners that can help us there. And then somewhat package it around our managed WooCommerce offering and like kind of have that to market. But at the same time, with the whole kind of gray area and the risk as well, for us as a company, it took me a while to get like buy-in internally from our like for my VPs and like the executives.
I mentioned CBD or something like that. Oh, no, that's too high risk. And that's one of the issues that CBD store owners are facing, not just in this country, but across the world, is it's so high regulated that a lot of hosting services don't want to get involved there. Or like Shopify, I believe, They're a service, e-commerce as a service, and I believe they sent out notices, or I think it was last year they started telling people we're going to have to shut down your stores, because I think they have relationships with some global payment processors that are not comfortable with dealing in these highly regulated substances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of like it varies state by state here in the U.S. As well. So it's just for Shopify, it's just a big risk, and it's a lot for them to deal with. And I think in the case of like what we saw, what you're referencing in terms of that post on WooCommerce, Automattic is kind of in the same place as well. It's kind of like, well, you know, the risk there is pretty high, and they're just trying to cut that risk. For us here at Liquid Web, and we take them on like we take the CBD brands on a kind of case by case basis, and we follow the guidelines to like for WooCommerce. So usually our plans all come with Jetpack installed. So we, for the CBD signups, then we have to, you know, follow the rules, right, and have that turned off. And then we help them as part of our solution too. We help them find like the right kind of payment gateway and the merchant provider through our partner. But today it's like, as of today, it is extremely tough if you're a CBD startup to get just a merchant account. If you're just starting off, you're most likely 95% going to have to find an offshore provider, offshore meaning like somewhere in the UK, a provider based out of there. If you're a larger CBD, if you happen to grow before it got even tighter, you can get a domestic bank and probably be paying somewhere around like 4% transaction fees right now if you're large. And by large, I'm meaning like maybe over 150K a month in credit card transactions for CBD. But that's having a history of that too and low chargebacks. So
I mean that's the thing. You could use open source software, which WooCommerce is, and you could create your store and put your products on there. But without that payment processor, you have no business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of CBD folks who are starting up now that are more so just kind of focused on the brick and mortar component to it first, because that's a little bit easier. But it's still hard to find like a it's a little bit less risky because there's the age verification, you know, in person thing. But there's still limits on like the number of different types of point of sale systems that you can use, and then it's even more difficult to try to find one that works with your, if you do have an online store and then you have your brick and mortar store, to find like those like plugins that talk together. That's kind of another kind of big pain point. And then the other pain point they have, so they have to like get that merchant account, they have to like set up, choose which kind of e-commerce platform they want to, which one they want to use, whether it's Shopify or WooCommerce or BigCommerce or whatever. And then it's like, once they finally get it built, then it's like they face a whole another set of hurdles of like driving traffic to their site, because they can't do Google ads, they can't do Facebook ads. They're very limited on the paid traffic. So they just can't buy an audience. They have to like really work hard for like SEO or trying to find some, there's some, a couple of other digital advertising platforms that are opening up, but it's nothing that's like the big mainstream ones where the majority of you know, people do, you know, search and those kinds of things. So that's when I go to, when I speak at like the CBD Expo shows, I kind of walk them through kind of all the hurdles they have to face to getting set up, and then what need to consider. And then
and after that, they go, maybe that's not the industry I want to get involved in.
Yeah, so my favorite line is to be like, yeah, you know, if you build it, they won't come, right? So you need to do it, just because you get it up, it doesn't mean you're going to start seeing sales immediately. You're going to have to do things kind of, I want to almost say like guerrilla marketing style, and not shady, right? But just like do things that folks don't normally do. Think outside the box and try to get traffic going to your site.
Yeah, and the sale of CBD products. I mean, I think Hawaii just recently became the 26th state to legalize weed in the U.S. We're about halfway there federally. The sale of marijuana is still illegal. So you got all these various states, and it's different here and different there, legal here, illegal there, and so you got all these challenges. But yet, for the successful store owners or the people who are in the trenches with their stores, the demand is huge.
Yeah. It's going to be a $22 billion market by 2022.
Oh, man.
So there's a lot. And there's just, there is. So what I tell them too at these shows, the folks who are in the audience, like, yes, you're going to have so much, you're going to go through a lot of hurdles to get through there, but to get set up. But right, like as of today, like selling CBD online is a huge competitive advantage because a lot of people get turned off or they just don't, they don't want to have to deal with it. But if you are,
it's too big of a hassle.
Yeah, it's a big competitive advantage. But from the brick and mortar side, I mean, there's some that I've talked to that don't have an online store. They just do straight up CBD brick and mortar, and they're able to get the return on their investment in terms of like setting up the store, getting all that stuff, the furniture and all that stuff like that. They turn green in like 3 months or 4 months. Mm-hmm. For a brick and mortar shop, that's like insane.
Yeah, I know here in Ohio. They recently, a couple of cannabis dispensaries opened up, and I was watching the news, and the news was, it was a big deal where they only allow a certain number of customers to come in, and, you know, they're trying to create these specialized experiences for people, and everything inside that store, I want to say almost everything, like even the lighting, probably not the lighting, but I mean, the wording and the displays and the information, everything is so insanely regulated in this industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So especially on the, that gets to the next kind of, that's a good point to bring up. So like on the website, there's a lot of rules that a lot of startups don't know that they have to follow. And so part of it is, some of it is like the FDA saying like, hey, you can't make any kind of medical claims, right? You can't say that, oh, it helps with anxiety, it helps with sleep. You can't say those types of things on your website. Obviously, there's not somebody who's policing that all the time. But if somebody were to target you, then you know you can get taken out pretty easily. And then the other part too is that like whoever your ends up being your merchant, whoever gets the merchant account or the bank that is going to like take care of it for that site. They have like a whole list of like terms that you have to like wording that you have to put on your site as well, and what you can and can't sell. So like today, if you're a startup, it's going to be very difficult to do sell CBD hemp flower and vapes, CBD vapes. That's almost an impossible thing to do today. And there's another supplement, health supplement, and that's kind of in the same space. It's called Kratom. Like nobody will touch that right now. But I've had people ask me at the last show whether we can help with that. And it's like, unfortunately, the partners that we do have just won't touch it. They just have to stick to doing like ACH or e-check or something like that to get those kinds of payments. But it's tough for right now. I don't know if you knew, but back in maybe like January through March or so, there was a processor called Elavon and US Bank. And they were like handing out merchant accounts to CBD startups easy, like, and it was, the rates were getting lower, and like through these merchant brokers, right, it was getting like lower and lower from like, you know, at one point it was like as high as 6%, and then it made its way down to like about 3%. So like you were selling t-shirts on Shopify, I think they charged like 2.9% standard. And then in March, actually it was right before the CBD show in March that I went to. The day before the show started, the announcement came out that Elavon US Bank was going to pull out. And if you were currently using them, which the majority of people were, either through a broker or through it directly, they had like 45 days to find a new home. And that just caused a huge disruption from there. And then that's when all these other banks that were kind of like taking in folks here and there, they got flooded with applications. And so the approval time went from like 2 weeks to like 6 to 8 weeks. I've seen it go that far. And then they just ask for a ton of documentation. And then there's some folks who just don't get approved. They don't have good credit. If they don't have a good personal financial background, then they ask for a ton of documentation. If you're a startup. And then the other piece too, that a lot of CBD startups don't realize, is that getting just a business bank account for your CBD business is also going to be a hurdle that you have to face. And that's kind of like step number one before you like get started. So what I usually tell folks is just like go try your small regional banks or your local credit unions. Those are the ones who are going to be most likely to like help you out. And I tell them just to be honest, right? Tell them you're going to be selling your business is CBD and it's not like health and wellness or something general, because if they're not cool with it, they find out eventually, then your account's going to get shut down, and then it's just going to be a whole like disruption to your business.
Now, John, I know you don't work directly on Easy Digital Downloads. You work for Simple Calendar. But, I mean, with your relationship right now with Sandhills, maybe internally, do you know of any discussions or know of any customer relationships going on with CBD stores and Easy Digital Downloads?
Not that I've heard of, because even though we do have like a simple shipping add-on, most of EDD's users are all selling digital things online and not really selling physical products that require any kind of fulfillment. So there are people that try to use EDD for that, and there are some add-ons to help with it. But generally, it's not not really the target market that EDD goes after.
We need to fork EDD really and create eCBD, Easy CBD. There we go.
There you go. There you go.
So you still have your three. Oh, go ahead, John.
We do have a dispensary that's in East Troy, actually, that opened.
Oh, come on, man. That's such a small town, and you guys have a
dispensary. I know, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, shout out to them, I guess. But we've gone into them a few times just to, like, see them as a new business owner. And Javi's right. I mean, the brick and mortar is kind of the way to do this right now. Mm-hmm. And breaking into the online sales specifically to, I mean, any kind of hemp based thing is different state to state. And the one that is here local to me is like licensed, is like one of the very few first people by the state of Wisconsin to be licensed to like manufacture and resell like hemp based things. And so she's sort of been educating even the like inspectors and regulators that have come to visit her brick and mortar store. She is helping educate them on the direction that all these things are going, because it is just new. And so like we talk about it being like something that is so heavily regulated, it is also a problem of it being like newly regulated and the regulations being so different and foreign to the entities and people that would generally be inspecting like a business like this in the first place. If this was just a health inspector or a food inspector or something like that, these are rules that, yeah, they change, but they're not brand new. They've been around for a long time. And so when someone starts talking about wanting to open a CBD dispensary, folks around here just don't really know exactly what that means or what that entails. And so everyone kind of has to shuffle quickly and learn as they go, let alone trying to go through the process of vetting someone for a business account, for maybe a line of credit, for payment transactions online, where a lot of this stuff is happening virtually, where people's butts are kind of on the line, or they're, I mean, not just for the sale of potentially illegal product, but the movement of it through their own platforms, and just like the liability for everyone needs to be, I mean, is deeply scrutinized, because everything is changing so quickly that people are afraid to be responsible for this stuff. I mean, it makes a lot of sense why brick and mortar works, but even then, to do this right, it still takes a lot of research and investigation and time. Like the folks that are trying to just open and flip open a CBD store are going to have a hard time with this. Like the business owner locally to us has said that for her, that education has really been the key component that has helped like the inspectors and regulators with her, but also with her like clientele. Is like you said, Javi, like you can't really publicize that these things have any anticipated like or guaranteed health benefits, but you are allowed to talk about, you know, the potential health benefits that things have. And so they're different for everyone, and just educating them on what they can expect or look for, or what they should be what their clientele or their customers should be expecting from different various doses and strains of product, and then sending them on their way hopefully happy, and if not, they come back and kind of tune it to what it is that they're looking for. But it is fascinating. It's a super interesting and fascinating thing. Have you had to change payment processors? Has Liquid Web or your partners had to flip flop or move around as things have shuffled?
A little bit, yeah. So they have the partner that we use. They're called Merchant X, and they have a kind of like a portfolio of kind of banks and solutions that they can work with. But again, right as of right now, it's pretty slim choices right now of what can be available. But yeah, when the Elavon US Bank, which was the major one for CBD, when they pulled out, there were a lot of these smaller kind of merchant broker shops, or I guess ISOs, they call them independent sales offices, that they had all their eggs in the Elavon basket for CBD. And two of them were like big sponsors for that March CBD show. And when that announcement happened the day before the show happened, they didn't even show up. Like their booths were empty. Man. Like they were like one of the lanyard sponsors and some other, and they were going to be on a panel too or something like that. And when that happened, they just didn't show up because they didn't have a backup solution. So they were just kind of out of luck there. So, and then kind of going back to the brick and mortar piece. The hurdles there's hurdles too that unique to them as well. So like one of them is like they can find a prime retail location spot. Like, hey, this is high traffic. This is in a nice shopping area. But if that landlord doesn't want a CBD shop, which is the attitude that a lot of them have, then you're gonna have to go find another place. That's something that they have. And then in terms of the claims too, I've seen a number of shops like here in San Antonio where I'm located that have like the decals in the windows saying the medical claims on there. I'm just kind of like, no, like you're not.
Yeah, right. Even municipalities, like we have their ordinances that don't allow for specific types of businesses to exist in certain areas of town or whatever. Like one of the ordinances around us was specifically regarding like adult films and literature and tattoo parlors, because it's just like some old school ordinance that, like, you know, 50 years ago they were like, oh, well, we can't have that. But there wasn't specifically anything in there about dispensaries, because whenever anybody was looking at the ordinances and comparing them to the state of Wisconsin, a dispensary was never even really an option. And so there wasn't anything that explicitly disallowed a dispensary to exist. And now everyone has to try and figure out, like, oh, is this the kind of business that we even want to allow in your like the downtown business area or whatever it is? And so people are figuring this out, right? Like, it's all brand new. And so it's interesting.
And it's unfortunately, there's still that stigma, and it comes from years and years of non-educating or assuming that it's just to get high, or it's just to do this, or just to abuse, or it's a gateway drug. And there are so many great benefits, medical benefits to CBD products that I think should be the focus. And, you know, one of the primary reasons of having more of these things, because it helps a lot of people. And it's unfortunate that this is such a sort of new industry, emerging industry that's becoming legalized state by state in the US, that, you know, you have those shops that place those medical claims in the window, and they're just doing a disservice to an industry that's already insanely hard to be successful in.
And it's like the for a really long time, I mean, we're decades away since prohibition and things like that, but I know that a lot of states have opened up with how they handle or how they tax wineries, breweries, brew pubs. Like, there's all those things are sort of they're kind of opened up, but generally speaking, the amount of licenses that states will give away for researching the benefits of hemp or CBD or anything else, again, still continue to be really tight. And so, there is a farm or a not-for-profit organization that's just up the road from our house now, actually, that is like one of the few first in the state of Wisconsin that's allowed to on-site study, grow and investigate and research the effects of cannabinoids and hemp-based products, and that will grow. But it's a weird time now for everyone that's trying to figure it out, because it's just so new. Even though it's years in into it, but it's still like new to regulators trying to do it. Plus, like, there's also the part of it where like people have been breaking the law and dealing drugs for a really long time, right? And so now this is really just the, like, how do you figure out how to like capitalize and tax and like slowly introduce legalization to all of these things in a way that
and
is
on
like
top of that, decriminalize
it, right? Decriminalize it and everything for like millions and billions of people. Like, this is a slow roll, I think. This is one of those things that happens over time, and everyone is trying to hedge a little bit ahead of everyone else to get to be the people or the company or the real representative for CBD and the products. Like, you know, Anheuser-Busch and Miller Coors and things, like, there is opportunity for people to be that for this. But they've got to really get in there early and big. Mm. And it's hard to do when everything is just new and people are struggling to sell online and figure it out. I mean, it's really tough.
Yeah. Like, when you see, there's like articles out there sometimes where it says like, oh, CVS or Walgreens or some big chain is going to start selling CBD products. Right. Like, I think in those instances, they're only selling topicals, right, and not ingestible. That's what kind of like negates some of that risk factor. So whoever CVS is using for their like process, you know, credit card processing stuff, I think that's what they were okay with working with. And then, but then again, you kind of really don't. The other part too is for the whole like CBD industry in general, it's just like the quality of product. There's so many brands out there and so many different farms, so many different sources, so many different strains. And sometimes, you know, at least a lot of brands are getting really good at producing the lab, like having the lab results for the batches of stuff, of oil or hemp flower that they're selling. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's true, but like, you know, it looks very legit. And I think for like the regulations moving forward, that's going to be like a requirement to have, like, if you're a farmer and you're going to be selling your product, you're going to have to prove that what you're growing is like has what it's like what you say it's growing.
So like in mm-hmm. industry like the FDA or the USDA or whatever, like, you know, Food and Drug Administration probably going to have to approve mm-hmm. these strains or something, or, you know, the company or whatever, you know, that says, okay, you know, you can, because we've inspected this, you're going to get what you're getting or what's being advertised.
Yeah, it's like, I think the big holdup, I think the two government agencies, I guess, is kind of like the FTC and then the FDA. So the FDA kind of has to decide what it's going to be. I think at one point their stance was like, well, they're going to treat it like a pharmaceutical, but then it's like, well, maybe it's more of a supplement kind of thing. So but we're still going to be, I feel like the way kind of that whole process works, it's still going to be kind of like another couple years till that gets figured out. I mean, the way I kind of think of it too is you know, when you go to like GNC or you go online, you want to buy like protein powder, right? And it has like all these like weird ingredients that you don't even know what's in it. It's like, okay, so that's okay to buy, right? it's just a plant being grown, it's natural. Like that's high risk, you know? So that's where I'm kind of like, you know, I don't, yet, but I understand, you know, it's government trying to take it off of these things.
Well, you know, one of the overall trends that is very positive is that I think legalization of marijuana in the United States is just a matter of when and not if. And it's nice to see at least we're halfway there with the states doing it independently.
Yeah, and going back to like some of those, the state to state kind of thing is interesting right now for at least in the CBD space. So like for Texas, for example, like we passed a law for hemp grow, like for farming hemp here and selling the derived products from it, except for hemp flower, which is really weird. So you can sell, from my understanding of what I've heard too, is like you can make derived oil from the hemp that you grow if you're a farmer here, but you can't sell like Texas grown hemp flower, like in Texas. We have to actually import it from somewhere, like another state, to sell it here in Texas. That's the way the law was reading. So just, it's one of those things where it's like, well, that's weird. How are you going to even know, like, for sure, like where that hemp flower came from, you know? So kind of that's again, kind of going back to like the state to state laws, all that gray area. That's kind of why some of them, those big players don't want to, I mean, I think we're a big player too, but like those, the Shopify and Automattic, kind of don't want to touch it yet because there's just still a lot of uncertainty.
So you recently spoke at the CBD Expo in Seattle. What were your big takeaways from that event? And I imagine you spoke to a lot of people, maybe with successful or ongoing stores. Maybe you could share some of the experiences you heard from them.
Yeah, so I lost a little bit of your audio for a second, but my learnings from the expo was just that the biggest pain point that entrepreneurs are having is just getting that merchant account. One, two is just I speak there to educate them, so I want to let them know if you're going to choose kind of like an open source platform or like a closed platform, you know, but the one or the other, and I try to, you know, show, like, tell them, like, hey, you know, doing WordPress, WooCommerce, open source, having that portability is really important. That's like one of the best things that about it, and the customization around it. When you go to these like closed ones like the Shopify or BigCommerce, like if you're not happy with support, performance, whatever, like you can't pick up that store and take it somewhere else. You're going to be stuck.
Or if those services just decide that they don't like what you're doing, or determine that you're violating their terms of service, guess what? You're cut off. Your revenue stream's cut off. Your store is gone. And wow, talk about an industry where it's super important to own your own data and own your own platform.
That's exactly what I tell them. And then there's just a number of them that I talk to that have to replatform. They spent a lot of money on getting somebody to build their Shopify store, or they'd spent so much time doing it themselves. They were up for like a month and they got kicked off. And so now they're stuck, and like, you know, it's on their store website. It says like, oh, call us to purchase, kind of a thing. And so it's like, man, that's not a good experience. But, and then replatforming too, like I tell them, like, if you want the same look and feel from your Shopify store to WooCommerce, you're going to have to, you know, if you can't do it yourself, you're going to have to pay a web developer or web agency to do it. And that's going to be somewhere around probably about $5,000 or so in scope, depending on how many products and pages and stuff you have. And then what's interesting too is that there's a number of these startups who use Wix for their store, which surprises me. There's one that I'm talking to right now that's wants to replatform off of there. It's just they just have no idea. Like they don't know. They're so focused on like who their wholesaler is going to be, who they're going to buy from, all these types of things from that business aspect. And they have no earthly clue about anything about online e-commerce and what the things they need to consider there. So that's kind of my takeaway, is just like a lot of these folks I'm really there to just educate them, right? So I think like I enjoy helping these people, because like all they're trying to do is help more people with their health. And so that's where I get the joy in it. I get to help them out. A lot of them reach out to me. And I'll help them, you know, whether it's like getting a bank, finding the bank account, or finding a bank that'll help them open an account, the merchant piece. And, you know, I don't pressure them at all to be like, hey, you need to put it on our platform. It's like, you can put it wherever, you know, you can have your, I encourage you to use WooCommerce, and you can do it in anywhere you want. And if for some reason you choose somebody else and you're not happy, then, you know, you're more than welcome to bring it over, and it's going to be super easy for you to migrate over. So yeah, I think those are kind of my key takeaways. I hope by the next show in October, well, actually there's going to be one in Miami that I'm going to that's run by a different organization. I don't think there's going to be any new banks that are going to really open up, domestic ones, by then, but I'm hoping by the next October one for the CBD Expo, fingers crossed that there'll be like at least like hopefully one or two domestic banks that'll like be open to taking in CBD startups. But we'll see.
Well, and not to sound like a commercial or anything for Liquid Web, but you know, Liquid Web does managed WooCommerce hosting. So it's not just WordPress. It's highly tailored and specific to e-commerce, WooCommerce specifically. So yet it's on top of open source software. So you could move to a different host if you wanted to, but it's nice to know that Liquid Web actually sees this as an opportunity and wants to be an ally to those who want to get involved in this industry. For a lot of people who, like you said, know all the business aspects of it in terms of the product and the wholesaler, but nothing about the digital and e-commerce side of things that could really derail the business before it even gets a chance to get off the ground. So kudos to you and to Liquid Web for choosing to be an ally in an area where so many people just say, oh no, we're not going near that with the 10-foot pole.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really cool to be, it feels really good to be part of Liquid Web and like for them to allow me, like I can't do like online advertising and things like that around CBD here at Liquid Web and WooCommerce, just from a branding perspective, like a little bit scared about that, but I can go to, I can exhibit at shows, I can speak at shows, I can speak like here and talk about how you know, like our tagline is like, we're the most helpful humans in hosting. And I really believe that. I think everybody here internally, what, you know, if somebody comes in and chats about like questions around like setting up their CBD store, our folks are great at handling that. Our WooCommerce support team or WordPress support team too are fantastic with helping those folks as well. And then obviously me just being like a resource if my sales guys need help on their conversations or they can't answer certain questions, I make myself available to be able to talk to those brand owners. I probably talk to a brand, a CBD brand owner, entrepreneur, like at least one a day. That's kind of my, awesome. My average. And just helping them out, like just walking them through it. You know, again, I'm not trying to sell them anything, but just trying to be educational. And I just want the industry to know that, hey, we were Liquid Webs here from like day one, or, you know, even before day one, we were here to like help you guys get selling online.
And look, and just from a business standpoint, there is an amazing opportunity for growth in this space. And what a convenience it is for, you know, Liquid Web and their management commerce space and ally.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of business sense to me.
Yeah, it sure does.
So John, any last questions? Oh, I'm hearing a little bit of echo on your side, Avi, from you can hear my voice.
Oh, sorry.
It is being a little weird. I don't have anything else. The only other thing I was going to add was, it's not specific to Liquid Web or WooCommerce, but it feels like we shouldn't be talking about this without at least a shout out to Robert DeVore from the WP Dispensary plugin, who also has, I know he's got like a shim or a little bridge plugin to connect WP Dispensary to WooCommerce and other things, but he's kind of really focused tightly on the dispensary software. He's got blocks for Gutenberg, age verification, coupons, all sorts of weird little things that are like kind of hyper sort of specific to what it takes to run a dispensary online. And so and along with connecting it to WooCommerce and everything else, like I feel like we kind of have to give a shout out to Robert for sure.
Yeah, and with Robert and some of the other people in the WordPress space with plugins and themes and dedicating like services maybe into the e-commerce space for the CBD or marijuana industry, I think those fellas just know that this area is ripe for success and for growth, and they're putting themselves in a position to where once it finally gets legalized across the country in the U.S., or at least legalized in more states, and maybe the regulations lessen up a little bit, or at least there's a lot more clarity and provides a lot more opportunities for people to get involved in this industry, those guys will be in a great position to capitalize on this. Because there's one industry I would have loved to get involved in a few years ago, it would have been craft brewing, the craft beer industry. But now I think it'd definitely be the marijuana industry, the CBD products.
You mean it wouldn't be installing carpet in people's basements, Jeff?
No, it would not.
Okay.
All right, so Javi, I'll give you the last word. Any final thoughts on this, and how can people get in touch with you if they're interested?
Yeah, sure. So I just want to say thanks for having me. I love kind of spreading the word and spreading the message and education. People can usually just DM me on Instagram. My handle is at Javi, Javi, Canna, Canna. So it's a little bit of play on my last name. So my last name is Cano. But they can email me at it's jcano@liquidweb.com, and I'll be happy to chat and happy to help.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show today and sharing your expertise and your insight into this industry. And I'd like to get you on perhaps in a few months, and maybe you can give us like an update on the progress on what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to.
All right. Thanks, Javi. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
All right.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah.
There you have it, folks. That was Javier Cano, Director of Marketing for Liquid Web. And I told you it's going to be an interesting show. I mean, it's hard not to talk about CBD products and e-commerce without mentioning the legalities and getting a little bit political and having those other aspects, because it all it's all part of the larger conversation around these types of products in e-commerce, and you know, the medical mm-hmm. benefits and the studies and the stigma and the education. And I think really at the end of the day, what's going to propel this forward the most is education. And we need more and more education, research, and the medical research to make this just – because, look, I jokingly – when I think about this, you know, I jokingly think about it, but the there's this mentality out there where you people think of CBD. Like, imagine sunscreen or some topical that has CBD oil in it, and someone's going to say, whoa, if you rub enough on, will you get high? I mean, that's the mentality a lot of people have these days of these types of products. And it's not the case.
It's not the case, but it is, you know, people are, the way that they learn is by basing something off of something else that they think that they already know or that they're familiar with. And, you know, they're doing it in a joking way. I feel like that's like a lot of people's first reactions to when they learn about CBD and where it's derived from and how it works. And I feel like it's normal, but it is a little old at this point, right? It is a little, I don't know, kind of over it.
Well, I'm all for the legalization of marijuana simply because of the medical benefits, and I know it would help out a lot of people.
So you mentioned when we were talking with Javi, you know, how Liquid Web is an ally to these folks, and so I will segue into the later part of the show by giving a shout out to Allie Nimmons for a very excellent, super good blog post that she published on her blog, AllieNimmons.com, on how to be a WordPress ally. She goes super deep into not just what, you know, a WordPress ally is or how to be one, but frankly, like, what is the literal definition of an ally and how it's really not super suitable for how we tend to think about it and use the word today. And so she really talks a lot about privilege and its origins, and it's a great post. Everyone should read it. It's super enlightening, and I think it was kind of right on point. She says, you know, how can you be an ally? And so I'll quote one part of this here, where it says, it is easy to say to be an ally, but what many people don't understand is the problem, or feel awkward raising certain issues. It's not surprising to find that people stay silent and complacent. And so one of the first things she says is that people should say something. If you come from a position of privilege, that you sort of have the opportunity to elevate people without privilege. And so she talks about picking fights or jokes and these things. But then she also says that instead of saying something, if you don't know what to say, that you can also just say nothing. And that
branches off into explaining how listening is sometimes the best thing you can do.
Exactly.
But it's also sometimes the most difficult thing to do.
Yep. I mean, it's a super good blog post. And so I wanted to transition from one part of the show to the other for the first time and give Allie kudos for this, because it was a super good read. And I hope that our listeners check it out and listen.
And the thing I like the most about that post is her simple explanation as to how to be an ally, because, you know, there's a lot of issues in the WordPress space, or maybe in tech in general, maybe just in life in general, where mm-hmm. people realize that they have a certain kind of privilege and they're able to do things or say things or, you know, live life a certain way that maybe others are not. And, you know, she gives great explanation mm-hmm. as to how to take that and to elevate people who are not in that same position.
She positions it so well, because she says, simply put, an ally is someone who intentionally uses privilege to support, assist, and stand up for those who don't have that same privilege. An ally is not someone who supports a minority only when it is convenient, cheap, easy, safe for them to do so. But they make changes big and small to support underserved people whenever they can. And then she says, and this is my favorite part, there's always someone worse off than you, which means that everyone can be an ally once they become aware of their privilege. And so it was just very, I don't know, it read exactly the way that I think it needed to be typed out in the first time that I've read it this way. And so it's just really, really good. So Thanks, Allie, for writing this out. Tons of words. I mean, this is like what WordPress and blogging is for. I mean, this is great. This is a very well thought out.
Wouldn't it be nice to see more content like that?
It absolutely would be. That's awesome.
So let's see. Other things to talk about. Well, let's see. I can go over a couple of these things. I know that some of the PHP coding standards to WordPress have been changed. There was also a discussion last week by Brad Williams on Twitter where he raised a point, and he says, quote, "A really interesting topic around remote companies and one I haven't seen talked about much is the idea of statism. Basically, not hiring from certain states because they're heavy-handed laws, usually tax-related. And he says that there are a few states I'd rather avoid at this point," end quote. I don't know if you listed any of those states, but that's also something in remote worker workplace discussions that I have not heard discussed. Is I wonder if some of the people in charge of hiring definitely take a look at where this person lives, and based on the taxes or tax rates of what they, the company will have to pay, if that just automatically excludes them from the position.
So this is something that, like, in the years of working remotely or distributedly, that in my experience, I think the answer ends up being yes. Like, generally, especially with like companies that maybe don't have the means, or they're kind of just learning how this works.
Essentially, this is just companies, business doing, this is just business as usual.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, they're going to look and see what someone's compensation package is going to cost the organization or cost the company. And so it's not just salary. This is salary and benefits and taxes or workman's comp or whatever, right? I mean, like every state does generally have something different here, and country to country even. Like a lot of the times remote workers that are not from the U.S., if it's a U.S.-based company, they're paying employees as contractors, or they're paying them through a different type of company, or they're just ways to try and, like, yes, call someone a full-time employee as they are, but are just compensated differently, and people's living wages and salaries are different. I mean, when compared to a U.S. dollar, so what it takes to attract the talent that you're looking for as a company is going to be different from place to place, country to country, and state to state. It's one of the reasons why there are essentially a human resource company or agency like TriNet or whatever they're called now. I think they maybe just renamed themselves, but like these are companies that kind of try to really focus on helping businesses not have to take on the educational burden of what all of the taxes or the different healthcare options that they might have internally, and instead just hand all of that off to a third party that can handle all of that. Like, it's just a lot to worry about as a company, especially if you have your own accountant, you have your own, you know, you have your own tax person that does all these things. It's a lot to give to them too. So I get it. Like when Brad mentions that there are just different states or areas that it's hard to look at or to hire some people from, like this sort of has sort of always been the case, but just every state is different and weird. They have their own issues, and in my experience, it is kind of just worth handing that off to somebody else. And when you get to a certain size where you're 30, 40, 50 employees, you don't need to relearn what everyone's very specific things are, to just offload that to someone that's good at it. That's my unsolicited advice, I guess. I missed the thread, but that's what everyone has always done. It's just like, okay, we can't scale this anymore ourselves. It's not worth it. Give it to somebody else to solve.
And Ben from Liar WP, he asked a question on Twitter the other week. He says, "Would anybody be interested in a product hunt type website purely for WordPress themes, plugins, and services? I think this needs doing. It's hard for developers to get products they slave over out there without costing a bomb in marketing. Anybody else interested in this happening?" I said, yeah, I'm all for this idea, because you know, you create this awesome thing or this solution for WordPress, whether that be a theme, product, or service, and it is insanely difficult to get the word out there in front of a lot of people outside of being mentioned on the Tavern or maybe Post Status or maybe even WP Ginner. There's a few select websites out there, specifically in the WordPress ecosystem that can help you get a new product or service out there in front of a lot of people. And I think there's just a lot of products that a lot of people just have no idea about simply because there's just not a great way of telling a mass amount of people about them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is the same problem that has kind of always existed a little bit on the plugins and themes repository, where discovery is just a big issue. Like really finding the thing that is, that kind of solves the problem that you're hoping for just is really difficult.
You know, you mentioned that, and then I always go back to this, that the new plugin and theme release posts on weblowtoolscollection.com were the most popular and highly trafficked blog posts, because without them, people had no idea about the new things that were going into those directories. And sometimes the people who were writing those, they did a brief introduction, maybe a very small review, so you kind of got a glimpse as to what those things were. And weblowstoolscollection.com received a number of comments all the time, like, wow, you know, I've been looking for something that kind of does something similar. I'm going to check this out. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I've not seen a WordPress site that does those type of release posts every day, which is a shame, because that'd be easy traffic.
It is the difference between like a curated list of the things that someone finds, which is generally what is on the tavern or post status or something else. It is kind of what everyone is seeing filtered through somebody's eyes and fingers into a blog to try and like get awareness about a thing that's out there. But a product hunt is kind of would be an interesting thing. Like the only thing with product hunt is it requires a community behind it. It requires some moderation tools. It requires moderators to get rid of the spam. It would be interesting, but it would start off as a pretty grassroots effort that would grow pretty crazy eventually, because there's just so much that comes out from day to day. And what do you include in there? Do you include updates, feature releases, like an update to, you know, EDD? Does that get a bump in its own product and its own thing? How do you handle just a regular old update to something? I don't know.
And then cool Mario Pesciv contributed to the thread, No Fear Inc. Hey, on Twitter. He says, I don't disagree with your stance. I just think the overall quality of WordPress-based solutions is pretty poor, meaning that the site will end up promoting mediocre products or posting frequently. That's all. And that's a pretty good argument to make.
Right. That's kind of what I'm hinting at with moderation here.
Unfortunately, I think the odds of that happening are greater than a product hunt-like site becoming pretty successful.
Yeah, it would be tough, but that's where you need trusted moderators and people to help kind of elevate the things that need it, that warrant it, and kind of trim out the stuff that doesn't. But how do you do that in a way that's fair and like doesn't? I don't know.
Yeah, well, it seems like same old
problems.
You just do like remember managewp.org, where people submitted news stories and people upvoted them. You had a community. I think they even have products or news releases. They would just have to make a category, and then you let people upvote them. And I mean, so I there might be kind of a solution out there already for that, but that'd be one way of accomplishing it. Kind of get the crowdsourcing involved. A couple more things here. Friday, July 26th and Saturday, July 27th, you can watch WP Campus for free. It will be live streamed thanks to some contributions, some sponsorship from Pantheon Hosting, so that's pretty cool of them to do. And DonateWC is looking for applicants for its sponsorship program. And if you don't know what DonateWC is, it's called Donate WordCamp. It's a nonprofit, provides underrepresented and minority groups within the WordPress community with the means to attend a WordCamp. And it's the organization that Marcel Bootsman recently generated, I believe it was like 8,000 euros, 8,500 euros, something to that effect, for the organization. So it's a great initiative over there with DonateWC. And other than that, WordPress 5.2.3 is being worked on. It looks like that could be released in September, maybe. I don't know. There's not a whole lot going on with this point release from what I've seen. You've got WordCamp US that's coming up, and I think sort of the plan for WordPress 5.3 is maybe to go out before WordCamp US. It seems like that'd be the logical thing to do. And then there's things going on with, there's an experiment going on right now with a block installer in the WP admin, which is kind of neat that's going on right now, where you'd actually be able to test out new blocks and demo them, and it would use the Shiny Updates technology so you can quickly install and activate the blocks within WordPress. So there's that going on. And
I've got a couple things. Have we talked about the design experiments plugin from the WordPress.org design team? Did that come up at all?
No.
We talked about that in the show before. So there's a plugin that everyone should give a try. It comes with a disclaimer on it that things are likely to change, but there's a plugin available from the WordPress.org design team that's just called Design Experiments. It is largely led, I think, by Tammy Lister, Mel Choice. If I look at the list of contributors, there's a bunch. But Frank, it's just some ideas the design team is throwing around. There's a plugin you can install to just see what the design team is thinking. So they might change some CSS, maybe move some things around, try some chunkier headers. They've got some screenshots in here now, which is awesome. I just think it's really cool. It's like one of those opportunities to see firsthand, maybe a little bit ahead of time, what people are trying and playing around with. So I wanted to talk about that. I also had an opportunity last week when we didn't have a show to give a local dev from Pantheon a real try. Like installed it, downloaded it, turned it on, ran it, and got to the point where I started making a site and realized that the much like I think Josh Koenig had tweeted about or had responded to when people were talking about local dev from Pantheon, that it really is a tool that is exclusive to Pantheon users and folks that have sites that are hosted with Pantheon. This tool, local dev, instead of it being like another local by Flywheel or a MAMP or a ServerPress or something else, it is really just for pulling down and pushing up Pantheon sites locally. It's pretty cool. It looks really cool. It's definitely still beta, but it worked really well. I had a Pantheon site that I could pull down and play with and give it a try. But it is a different kind of tool. It is still specific to Pantheon. And then WordCamp Boston's coming up this weekend, which is a big one. So I wanted to say hi and give a shout out to everyone that's attending WordCamp Boston this year, because when I lived in Rhode Island, it was one of my favorites. And so since I won't be there or speaking or attending, I wanted to remind everyone that that's coming up. WordCamp Denver is after that. And then WordCamp for Publishers, which I'm sure we can talk about more next week, is August 7th and 9th.
And that will be in Columbus, Ohio. And this came out today, or I saw this recently, that the first ever WordCamp Asia, there's a date now. First, it was proposal. Now there's an actual date. It will take place in 2020 between February 21st and February 23rd. So it's in the early planning stages, but there's a date now. And that seems to have excited quite a few people. So congrats yep. to the Asian WordCamp Asia community on putting awesome. That together.
I think Matt hinted at that at in WordCamp Europe. But, yep. And then
so, there you have it. Yeah, this is the summer of WordPress. Next week, who's our guest on next week? We're going to have a guest on next week. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but we're going to talk about the indie web. So he's pretty deep into creating discussing and promoting the indie web. So we're going to learn what the hell the indie web is, why it's important. And quite frankly, if the open web's going to disappear in lieu of all these corporate silos, or if it even stands a chance. So I can't wait for next week's episode to discuss the indie web. Other than that, let's just get out of here.
Enjoy
the rest of our week. Let's wrap it up. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wbtavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffroJeffr0. Where you could see my tweets of birds. So it's like I'm on Twitter tweeting about birds.
It's very meta.
It's very meta. And John?
You can follow my blog at jjj.blog, where I've actually published a couple of things and have some stuff in the pipeline, mostly about new house, home, automation-y kind of things. And follow me at GitHub and Twitter still at jjj.
I'm supposed to close out the show, but I'm going to close it with this and probably not give you a chance to respond because I can stop the broadcast at any time I want. But you know, when I read your Twitter and you talk about these automation technologies about closing blinds, I ask myself, why can't you just get your ass out of the chair, turn the knob, and close the blinds? And with that, we're going to end the show, and maybe we'll get John's reactions next week. All right, so long, everybody. Say bye, John.